Our first speaker is Matt.
Hi, my name's Matt. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Matt.
Pass that around. I'm down 160 pounds from my top weight. I have over 4 years of abstinence. And, you know, one thing my sponsor always told me was, you know, you can't learn this stuff. You have to experience it. And that's where I think I don't, you know, as far as a workshop goes, I don't think I would come to a workshop like this expecting to leave knowing that I have all the answers now about my abstinence or my food plan. I think all I can do is share my experience, which is when I came in, my sponsor, he did a red light, yellow light, green light food plan. Red light foods were the foods I ate. I knew I ate compulsively. The yellow light foods were the iffy foods, and the green foods were the foods that weren't a problem for me at all. Green foods usually were green. So what I had to do for myself, I had to look at my red light food list, and I looked at what is the common ingredient in all of these, and so I abstained from foods that have that. You know, and this whole idea of the differentiation between food plan and abstinence, I eat 3 meals a day, nothing in between them, and I abstained from my abstinence from my red light, from alcoholic foods. But the whole point is, like, I can sit here and I can tell you about how I got abstinent. I can tell you about how I ate. And it's like, the thing is, if I sit here and I tell you about how I ate, like, that's a diet. You might as well go and look in the billboards that tell you how to lose weight, because none of them tell you how to maintain it. Like, it's all bullshit. And even in here, when people talk to me all the time about their food, what they're eating, what their food is, it's like, you know, my spouse is like, what step are you on? You know, it's like I can come in here and I can design the perfect food plan. I'm going to eat fish and chicken, but then, you know what? What about when I have to, you know, I work for the Indian Film Festival, and it's Indian, it's like curry and rice. Like, I've been stuck there, like, dealing with, I had rice. Is it what I normally eat? No. But I learned through this program, it's about honesty and doing it with someone else. So I commit my food every day before I commit my lunch, my dinner, my breakfast for the next day. And if I have to make a change, I call it. But the whole point is like, I'm a compulsive overeater. And like, the big book talks about how the main purpose of this book is to enable me to find a power greater than myself that can follow my problems. And in the doctor's opinion, this is by a doctor, he's talking about addicts. The thing is, I have to accept the fact that I'm a compulsive overeater, but that means that I'm an addict. And if I'm an addict, what do addicts look at? They look at the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the 12-step program. That talks about, they have a doctor in here that says what an addict is and how an addict behaves. And talks about, we believe and so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol in these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. The phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temper drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. My simple explanation of that is, you know what, I really can't do flour. I really can't do pizza. I'm not going to just do one piece of pizza and put it down. I'm going to do the whole goddamn pie. That's what that tells me. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm always going to do that. You know, and then it goes on to talk about the main purpose of this book is to enable me to find a power greater than myself. Why do I need to have a power greater than myself that can solve my problems? I need a power greater than myself because I'm sick. I'm a compulsive overeater. There's this power, this disease that I have, this dis-ease in my thinking, this dis-ease in my body that creates an allergy of this phenomenon of craving that I have. It's bigger than me. So that means I need something even bigger than that, which means that I have to work at 12 steps. And one of the first rules, like the first step is one, we admitted we're powerless over food and our lives have become a manatee. Like one thing I say to my sponsees, and one, you know, I'm sure someone else said it, but I feel like I can. If I admit, I commit. If I admit, I commit. I am powerless over being a compulsive overeater. So I commit my food every day. It's the most spiritual action I can do on a daily basis. Maybe I don't meditate. Maybe I don't read from a big book. Maybe I'm treating someone like crap. But I commit my food. My food's in order. Because I know I'm a compulsive overeater. Like, I can't skimp on being honest about my food. Because I'm a compulsive overeater. You know, like, I don't eat no matter what. Like, there is, you know, I don't drink. My dad's alcohol. I mean, I never drink. But, like, you know, there's this after party for this thing, and all they're going to do is go do a bunch of shots. Like, they're not going to have fun. It's, like, stupid. So I wanted to go, and I feel like the nerdy kid, because I'm not going. But you know what? I don't compulsively overeat anymore. But the thing is what I have to recognize is I'm still an addict and I still have to be honest about what I do. What I did, I went home and I chewed 2 packs of gum. And I had like the worst gas. Like, horrible. But like the whole point is like we still do that kind of shit. But the whole point is like I talked to someone about how uncomfortable I was. I learned to work the steps on it. And sometimes like when people talk about working the steps on something, it's just simply just being honest about whatever you're going through. And it's about calling someone before you do it. You know, it's like, someone said to me this morning, the only thing that keeps me from being abstinent is me. And I think like that's, I have to own the fact that once I'm in these rooms and I know I'm a compulsive reader, if I choose not to take the actions that allow me to recover, that's on me. That's on me. And it's like, it's a simple program for complicated people. And it's like, why am I so complicated? It's because I still want to eat my cake and not get up to 340 pounds. I don't know how a normal person, I literally, in my head, I cannot comprehend when I see someone that can sit there and have a piece of cake and they're thin. I don't get it. I don't see how that's humanly possible. Because I can't. Like, it's just not going to happen. But in abstinence, in abstinence, when I'm honest, this shit doesn't have control over me. You know? But the whole thing is like, just because I'm absent doesn't mean I'm going to be comfortable. You know? It's like, you're not going to be, if I'm a compulsive overeater and all I do to feel good is to eat, and I stop eating and I don't feel good, just because I don't feel good doesn't mean the program's not working. You know? And if you don't like what your sponsor has to say to you, it's probably a good thing. You know, my sponsor says, I'm not doing a good job if you don't have resentment. You know, my whole thing is absence. I'll end with this. My absence is really hard. And the more honest you get, the harder it gets. But then, you know what that means? I lean into my program more. It means that, you know what, my first year of absence, I got from this detailed thing by number. And I knew at night I would eat. And I couldn't always talk to people. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about, early person. So I sat there with a pain by number and the most detailed pain by number I've ever done in my life. And I still have it 4 years later. Because food is not an option. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you, Matt. Our second speaker is Alma.
Hi there, I'm Alma. I'm Alma, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Alma.
My bottom line abstinence is I do not do obvious sweet, and I do not do recreational sugar. What I mean recreational sugar is anything that looks, tastes, smells like a dessert. If it's going to make me feel good, that's probably dessert. I'd like to kind of interject. I was asked to also talk about relapse in this program, and I'm like, relapse? This was my sponsor. I said, relapse? I never relapsed. I was in the program in 1990, and I was here for 3 years abstinent from sugar at the time. And in abstinence, I didn't know the weak part, but in abstinence, I found sugar-free substances. And in abstinence, I gained my weight back. The first time I came into this program, it was about the weight. It was about dropping the weight, letting go of the weight, and I didn't. And in abstinence, I regained the weight. And then I was working with food. I was working with food the first time. I didn't realize that the first step was not only about being powerless over the food, it's about life being unmanageable. And that second part of that first step is what drove me out of this program. Because my life was crazy. I was abstaining from sugar, but as far as the unmanageable part of my life, I became more crazy as far as being of service to everybody but myself, but to my program. I was helping everyone, but I wasn't paying attention to the fact that the root of this program is our self-will. And my will was running riot. Even if it was in helping everybody else, it was my will because I wanted to be liked, I wanted to be loved. Because I couldn't do it for myself. So I became so busy that I no longer had time for this program. I left. And I went When I left this program, I was probably back up to 230. When I came back, actually, I went all the way up to 305. I actually had to lose weight before coming back because, oh God, forbid that I should be over 300 when I came back. And let me tell you, 300 didn't seem as frightening to hit as 200 did. 300, I was going for broke. I didn't give a shit. I just didn't. And I wasn't afraid of 300. I was fearful of 200 and toddled that number for years. But the 300 mark, I was so into my disease, didn't even realize it was happening. So I lost a little bit of weight before coming back. And got back into this program. And I knew I needed to do something different. It couldn't just be about it. So I got myself into a big book workshop, into a step study. I needed to learn the disease. I needed to respect the disease. And I needed to respect the founders who found the solution. That big book is a textbook on how to make it work, how to make our lives work from the insanity of our will, from the insanity of our resentment, our fear, our dishonesty, our secrets. It is a textbook. And that's what I had to do. I had to learn the program. My food, I keep it very simple. I try to keep an abstinence that I could keep without feeling like I'm on a diet, like I'm compulsively thinking about what I have to eat and what I don't. That is my program. It works for me. I've been able to let go of 100 pounds from that. And you know what? I'm not there yet, but I've taken the slow route. I've been abstinent for 3 years, and it's a slug pace. It's a snail pace, and I love it because I'm still in the right direction. I didn't drop the weight fast, and I thank God because you know what? The fear in me, my will, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it and survive in this society. I'm too fearful. I would have been too exposed. So letting go of it slowly, nobody really picked up on it. I love being the center of attention, and I hate being the center of attention. Don't look at my body. Don't comment about my weight. Because you tell me you look great mean that you hated me when I was 305 pounds. That I was not sexy at 305. That I was not lovable at 305. And that, to me, is more unacceptable and will drive me to the food. I finally learned that I had to love myself no matter what weight I was. That allowed me to start letting go of not the weight, but the spiritual, emotional weight that I was holding. My body manifested my disease, and we're talking both sides. The fact that I'm powerless over food and that my life is unmanageable. My will, my selfishness, my self-centeredness. I was the most giving person, and I only gave because I wanted it back. Because I was so empty. I was eating because what I wanted to fill was my heart. And the only thing I could control was filling my stomach. And I'm learning through this program that my abstinence, the food doesn't call to me if I'm being filled with my higher power. Now, can I say, God is fabulous. I feel him out. I feel him all the time. But you know what? When my food is an issue, I know that it's my will that's coming into play and not God's will. And I need to sit down, pause. The big book tells us, pause. Take a deep breath. Because that will remind me, where am I coming from? My will or God's will? And sometimes, that line is kind of great. I know it's God's will. Oh, no, you know what? That's why I have a sponsor. I have a sponsor because I call my sponsor, and my sponsor is very blunt. He's not nuts. He's not nuts. And I really don't like it. But you know what? It's a he, and thank God I have a he. He's not nice. He's not fun and tender and hateful. And I'm kind of gruff, and I'm self-centered. And I deal with things in a not nice way either. Anybody who gets in my way of my food or my life, step aside. But you know what? Sooner or later, it's going to come back on my plate. Pause. Go back to center. Go back to where is God in this, and not where is Alma, or what does Alma want? Because Alma wants to be able to eat whatever she wants, and not be anyone else. Letting go of the food this time around in program is the easiest of the things that I'm letting go of. I'm learning to have to let go of a lot of other things in life. And with God's aid, my abstinence is my, what I call my, what is that thing from Willy Wonka, educated, the executive, you know, rotten egg, not a rotten egg. Really. My abstinence is what shows me, am I rotten, am I not rotten? Because if this, my will is rotten, it's showing up in my food. My abstinence is being played with. It's hard. And if not, if I'm in God's will, life is fluid. My food's an evolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Alma. Our third speaker is Steffi.
Hi, I'm Steffi from Boston over here.
Hi, Steffi.
Okay, I'm a very opinionated old-timer, so excuse me. I'm going to start with that. I've been abstinent for 24 years. I've weighed, at my highest, I weighed probably 50 pounds more than now, and I've weighed 30 pounds less than now. And I can tell you whether I weighed 150 pounds or I weighed 80 pounds, when I looked in the mirror, I hated what I saw. So if any of you think that being at a certain weight is going to make a difference about how you feel, I'm here to tell you it makes absolutely no difference. For me. And again, sorry. Everything I say is for me, but I am very opinionated. When I first got here, there was no difference. The only term that I heard was abstinence. Fortunately, I got here when it was not gray sheet. When this program was first started, there was only one way to eat. And you could only, if you didn't eat that way, you were not considered abstinent. And I got here at a time when that was put aside, although I have to pay respect to those to that food plan, because at the end of the day, I've come back to that, because that's the healthiest, as it turns out. But what allowed me to get abstinent was the fact that I could define it, and I could work with it. Now, that leaves room for a lot of lying to yourself. At the end of the day, I'm sorry to say this, but we're all very, very, very selfish and self-centered people. You don't get to become an addict because you are giving. Although if you told me at the time that I'm not giving, I would have... I do everything for everyone. And just as you said, it was in total expectation of receiving something. But I don't ever want to stop eating. I mean, I'm 24 years later. I'm telling you people, if I could, I would have ice cream, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Nothing about my DNA has changed. So, nothing. The only difference in 24 years is that I know to say, well, thank you, but I don't think if you were to have coffee, ice cream, that's really going to tide you over until 8:05. So, the one thing that really helps me was the person who helped me get abstinent was very clear about what is your problem. My problem has never been big meals. I never binged on pizza. I never binged on pasta. I never binged on bread. Couldn't have cared less about any of those things. I'm addicted to sugar. That's the only thing that calls my name. Could not care less about anything else. So my abstinence, it made no sense for me to say I'm not going to have flour. It made no sense for me to say I'm not going to have popcorn. These things don't set me off. But an extra apple that it's just so damn sweet has me running to the, off to the races. So my recommendation is to just be honest with someone. It's not go and grab someone else's abstinence, but you have to say, when I have X, Y, and Z, that's when I don't want to stop. you know, using your analogy, Matt's analogy of red, white, and red, yellow, and green, if they're different. Things that set me off may be different than things that set you off, or patterns that set people off. I've heard people say, if I eat in my car, it's breaking my abstinence. So just please do everybody, including your sponsor, a big old favor and save lots of years and be honest. When you say what sets you off, and if you say it's everything, fine, it's everything. When you define what it is that sets you off, then what I did is I said, okay, sugar is my thing. And this lovely lady came up to me and said, okay, honey, can you not eat sugar for a day? And I said, hell no. You know, just get out of my space. Between, you know, I was on Melrose, and I said, I don't think I can make it to La Brea without eating sugar. What are you talking about? So she said, okay, can you not have things with refined sugar? And I said, what does that mean? She said, that gives you the option of having things that are made with unrefined sugar, fruit juice and honey and whatever. And I said, I think I can do that. And she, and again, bear in mind, this is 25 years ago. You know, there weren't sugar-free things in 7-Eleven. I had to go to Irwin with her. I had to, you know, there were two places I could go to in the greater Los Angeles area. Irwin up here and Mother's Market in Newport Beach, where my family lives. And I went to each one of them, and my abstinence, which is no refined sugar, started with me having a pound of sugar, of fruit juice sweetened granola, and two big fruit juice sweetened, you know, what was it, peanut butter cookies. I do not recommend this. I'm just saying this is how I started. And then I'd wake up with a friggin' headache the day after because you consume that much fruit juice. Trust me, you're going to feel like crap. And then I'd get down on my knees and I'd say, God, please help me stop doing this. God, please help me stop doing this. And one day, miraculously, I'd go to Irwin and I wouldn't want it. So the power to not put pastries comes from God. But there's no easy way around it. You've got to do the work. Not one person here wants to be indoors in a first sunny day of the summer. Mm-hmm. But you do what you have to do. You are guaranteed a reprieve from a lethal, deforming, debilitating disease if you do the work. It's that simple. But no one is going to do the work for you. I've gotten my ass out of bed when my body aches with fatigue because I just had to show up somewhere. And everyone who's seen me on the website knows I show up in meetings really. I shouldn't be in, you know, public company. But I do that because that's what they taught me to do. And I get down on my knees because there's something humbling about getting down on my knees. Didn't really necessarily believe in God when I first got here. Just thought it's really a tool for the uneducated masses. But, okay? You know, whatever. When my thighs rubbed against each other and I would walk and I would sweat would pour out of me, I didn't care if you asked me to believe in a jackass. I was willing to bow to a jackass. That's what... So I wish I could convey my passion to you to say how much easier your life will be and how much smoother your recovery will be if you listen to what your sponsor suggests sooner rather than later. I did it the best that I could, but I got more and more and more relief the more I did the things that were suggested to me. Invariably, if you're a compulsive overeater, it's going to involve eating less. Sorry. There's no match. I mean, it's, you know, I always yell at my babies when they talk about this, that, and the other. I'm like, excuse me, look at your food. Weight does not match. I have never known, and actually, you know, in all of these years that I've been here, I've never known anyone to magically gain weight or magically lose weight. There's a direct relationship. I mean, the laws of physics apply to us. And I wanted them so badly to not apply to me. I just really want to be exempt from the laws of nature. Something, you know, don't you know who I am? It really should be different for me. Is that it, Carol?
Yeah, that's, I have trouble with the time, but yeah.
But that's my 7 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Steffi. And our final speaker is Nanette.
I'm Nanette, I'm also a reader.
Hi, Nanette.
Carol, timer, could you give me 4 and then 3?
Oh, I could really try.
I'm going to type the 3 step, but I think I got it.
Thank you.
Again, my name is Nanette, I'm a professor of English.
Hi, Nanette.
I came to OA mostly to lose some weight so I could catch a man who would fix me. And I didn't know this. To me, OA was a diet club, but I heard in the meetings that it's not a diet club, so I was careful not to use the word diet. But secretly, it was a diet club. I wanted to lose weight and be perfect. And I thought all of you in recovery, which to me, the whole room was in recovery because I had nothing, that you ate teeny-weeny portions of food 3 times a day perfectly. And that's what I aspired to. In the first 8 years of coming to OA, I was asking 8 times. I was asking that 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 15 days, 17 days, 23 days, 27 days. Mm-hmm. And then the 8th time, which is the current one, is 28 years.
Wow.
Woo-hoo! So there's a big difference between 27 days and 28 years. And I don't know why I'm asking it, but I know that if I could get abstinent, anybody could. An example of how I ate, after work, during work, I would have this little brown bag lunch that I brought with all the best of intentions. And the place where I worked had 45 minutes for lunch, and lunch time arrived, and the brown bag lunch was too boring to eat. So I'd go to the cafeteria where they had choices. They had 2 entrees and then a bunch of sides, and you'd eat 2 of them. So I chose 1 entree and then 2 side pieces, and I ate them, and I was always a half eater. I ate them, they were gone. There's still time left in my lunch period. I went down to the first floor where there's some guy who sold cigarettes, chewing gum, newspapers, and pre-made sandwiches. So I'd buy 1 or 2 of those pre-made sandwiches. I'd go back to my desk, tear all the crust off, and ate the pre-made sandwiches, and then there'd be the lunch that I had brought, and ate that. So that was 8:00 a.m. And then on the way home, I would go to a fast food place and order as if for 2 people. 2 main things, 2 side things, and 1 diet soda. And I wouldn't eat it. I'd go back to my car. I would drive to the next fast food place to get whatever I had in mind to get. Because basically, if I thought it, I ate it. If a food thought entered my brain, I'd have to eat it. Whether it today, immediately, next meal, next day, during the week, I'd have to eat it. So if I thought it, I ate it. And then I would be in the parking lot of the last fast food place, eat everything, and then I'd feel this sense of relief, like the work day's over. And now I can go home. And sometimes when I went home, I would put maybe 2 TV dinners in the oven, take a shower, put on a clean flannel nightgown, and watch TV while eating the 2 dinners, and then maybe an hour or 2 later, I would have several sandwiches composed of white bread, room temperature butter, and sugar sprinkled rice sandwiches. Maybe 2 or 3 of those. And then before bed, I'd have a can of fruit cocktail or peaches or pears and a boiled bag of cream spinach. And that was a big eating day, but it wasn't an unusual eating day. I didn't eat that way every day. So here I was in OA and trying, all I knew was diet. Because I didn't have any recovery, all I had was a fantasy of what it ought to be. So I fantasized a diet and I couldn't eat it. Even a diet I devised myself. The average is 2 days average, 3 days max. I couldn't do it. Anyway, I discovered that I had to work in steps. starting with step one, which is I'm powerless over food. And that was a really difficult step to do because I couldn't acknowledge that I was powerless over food. But when I finally did, and I truly tried to be powerless over food, even though it felt really stupid, and I started to act as if that meant. So for me, being powerless over food, I certainly had an experience of being blameless. If I were truly powerless, then I'm also blameless. It was like if somebody who had TB coughs, they're powerless over that cough because that's what the disease made them do. If every time they cough, they said, I'm never going to cough again, I'm going to work 12 steps and not cough again, they're saying, I don't have a real disease of TB and I have control over a cough. And so I had to use that illustration to be powerless over food, which meant it was perfectly okay for me to binge and overeat. So the beginning of this particular abstinence, I realized that when I went to a restaurant, I felt bad if they ate too many rolls. So I said to myself, one of my guidelines for abstinence is that if I went to a restaurant and they had rolls, I'm going to have one roll and one pat of butter no matter which runs out first. And I put it that way because I'd take the roll, open the butter, use the butter for the roll would be gone, but there'd be a smidgen of butter left. Then I'd use the second roll, use up the butter, but there wouldn't be enough butter for the second roll, so I'd have to open the second butter. And then I'd use the third roll, use up the second butter, but there wouldn't be enough. And it would escalate. So I said, one roll and one pat of butter, no matter which runs out first. So when I was at a restaurant and they had rolls, I had one roll and one pat of butter. And then I ate everything they served me because I figured it was my portion. If I wanted the decorative lettuce, I ate it. If I wanted every grain of rice, I ate it. And that's not small eating. And then my first prayer in recovery was this. Dear God, I hope to clean up my food later, because I can't do it now. And in spite of myself, I started to lose weight. And here's an example of what recovery was in the beginning. My husband and I used to order a large pizza with everything on it except anchovies. They deliver it to our apartment, and he'd have half and I'd have half for the diet squirt. And somehow I knew that when you're in recovery, you can't eat exactly the same way as you ate when you're practicing. But I wasn't willing to give up pizza that 3 minutes after 7. Oh, okay. I'll just finish this one little thing. This one story, and then I'll stop. I wasn't willing to give up pizza, and I wasn't willing to give up a lot of pizza. So I said one slice off my half would not be mine. And for the first 2 years of recovery, I ate that much pizza, one slice less than a half. And starting the third year, I started to be able to stop at one slice more than a quarter. And sometimes one slice more than a quarter is exactly the same as one slice less than a half, depending on how they cut. But every now and then it was less. And then on the fourth year, I suddenly stopped at a quarter of a pizza, although I still allowed myself one slice less than a half. And the fifth year, I sometimes had one slice less than a half, and sometimes quarter, depending on my spiritual condition. And today I have a pizza, I have a quarter of a pizza usually with no cheese, vegetarian, and I really enjoy it. So my time is totally over and I've gotten over October. So thank you for that. Yeah.
Let's thank all of our speakers. Now the workshop will open for 15 minutes of Q&A, and I'll select whoever wants to ask questions. So you can either address it to all or one speaker. Passing around Nanette's picture. So Q&A.
Well, my question is, I feel like whatever it is I pick will lead me to eat only that. So if I pick sugar, because I have a lot, like somebody said, I could say a lot of things, then I will, like a little five-year-old person who's mad, eat extra sugar because I have picked sugar. So what do you suggest to us now?
I, first time in program, did not give up bread. Second time I came back, I knew I needed to let go of bread because I couldn't drop the basket. I only did it a day at a time. And I said to my sponsor, for the only the next 24 hours, I will not eat bread. Just, and he said, you sure? And I said, yeah, I can give you 24, but that's it. That's it. And I did that for 2 months. Until the craving, physical craving went away. Once the physical craving went away, because if it's anywhere near me, I won't drop it. I was willing to give the bread to God. But I could only do it for 24 hours later, for the first 2 months. And I committed to it every day.
And one thing, I'm a guy, my sponsor is a guy, so there's a whole different way to men talk to each other. But he would be, who's running the show? If I know I have to give up sugar and I want to negotiate, who's running the show? My higher power or my will? You know, and my thought is, you know what you're asking. Because you know. And that's how I learned to fall back into my higher power and to be honest. And then changes could happen, regardless of what I thought the outlines, outcomes were possible.
Nanette, go ahead. I think Nanette had it.
There's nothing I don't eat, so including sugar. But actually, because of high cholesterol, I try not to eat animal fat. And the reason I'm able to do that is because Owen doesn't say that. Because I have a very resistance, you know, and I'm passive aggressive, so I will, destroy myself doing what other people tell me not to do.
Yeah.
So Owen doesn't mention fat, he mentions sugar. So I'm able to do this fat myself. So it's okay to evolve. It's okay to find your way. And if it doesn't work today, something else tomorrow, doesn't mean you have to break your abs, stop your abs. You can just evolve.
I saw a question.
Yeah. The question is that, you know, I've been in OA for a long time, and some of the time I've lost weight, and lots of the time I haven't lost weight. The question is there a point, is there an action that you took that was the beginning of your resume? You know how, like, we can be in the program for a long time, we can try things that doesn't work. You know, was it a prayer? Was it the food plan? What was the thing that changed you from the hanging out and not losing weight to the beginning of the losing weight? I think anyone had anything to say on that.
I'll go. I have strong opinions about this. I didn't hang around and not lose weight. As I said, there was only one thing that I ate a lot of, and that was sugar. But again, within that, when I first started, I was absolutely having more than a normal human being should. But for me, it was a start. It's all God. I'm not going to tell you eat less. If you could have eaten less, you wouldn't be here to begin with. If I could have done anything less myself, I wouldn't be here to begin with. It just starts, for me, it starts by saying, being very honest. When I look at my food, I see when I'm having two bowls of oatmeal versus one. When I eat more than my husband does, you know, that's a good indicator that maybe a female ought not eat more than a man. So I kind of feel like I know when I'm overeating. And it starts by telling another person, I am having two servings of this. I'm not willing to give it up. And then it goes to God, please help me. God, please help me. You've got to give me the willingness. If I could have, I would have. And just like Nanette said, it starts with whatever it is I'm trying to give up. So sometimes it's something, I don't know, actually, aside from sugar, there hasn't been anything that I've gone through. But it's just put one, leave one bite for God. That was what my sponsor taught me. So I have my thing that even within abstinence I have a lot of is frozen yogurt. And for years, Natalie, this is my deal with her, I get in the car, I get this big old yogurt, you know, thank God over the years it's gotten smaller. And I just pile it up to here, and I just take that beautiful top, you know, swirl, and then dump half in the trash can. And every time they looked at me like I'm fucking nuts, but I didn't care. That was the only action I could take to say, I am willing. I'm not willing to give up this frozen yogurt, but I'm willing to have a little less. And then, so if you need to lose weight, you've got to eat less or exercise more. But as I said, I've never been able to will myself to do either one. It starts by really being honest with someone and then asking God for help. And then one day, magically, I can do something that if you had told me a week before I could do, I would have said, no way in hell. That comes from God for me.
One of the things I did was, before it was all, I was aiming for this perfect diet, little pristine food. And what switched in this one of the things that switched, is that I said meals at mealtime is like eating food. Because I didn't want to eat breakfast at 12:01 a.m. And I didn't want to eat four dinners occasionally. So meals at mealtime is like eating food. And also, at the same time, the being willing to recover the disease of perfectionism, which in me is so strong. It's like the conjoined twin of the disease of compulsive overeating. It's like we're joined. If one twin gets the flu, they both get the flu. If one twin takes an aspirin, it can go into both circulation systems. So I will never recover from the disease of compulsive overeating unless I'm also willing, just willing, to recover from the disease of perfectionism, which is actually harder in some ways than to recover from the disease of compulsive overeating.
So this has been touched on a little bit already, but I found that the food plans and abstinence is going to try. I'm really good at manipulating, like Matt, you said, you know when you're absent, but I feel like I don't know when I'm absent because I keep telling myself that, okay, well, it was all on one plate, so that's, you know, not going for second servings, or, you know, like I tried to leave a bite for God, and I was like, but God's not going to eat it, so I don't want to waste food. So I was just wondering, how do you kind of get around your own BS, essentially?
When I first came into the program, I mean, I'm still really new to the program. I have 4 years. I still am figuring out what to do. And I still think I should lose more weight. And I'm always trying to lose more weight because that's where I am. You know, but when I was new, there was this group of guys, and they all knew the exact same food. I ate the same thing for nearly my first year of absence, the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And you know what happened? Like, you can't, I'm a human being. I'm not a statue. And there are guys in this group who basically kind of started to drop like flies out of OA because it became a fraternity around a food plan. And they all knew the food plan, and they all lost hundreds of pounds, and we're all cool. And they all started to leave. So what I had to do was I had to get honest. Like, is this really going to work for me? Can I really go out into the real world and live a life that the program teaches me, the 12 steps teach me to live and eat this way? So what I had to do was I had to, you know, Terrell, who knew Natalie, we're in the founding place of OA. You can't find the people who knew the founders. Like, you can find these people. I needed to find people who had 25 and 30 years of absence that could tell me, like, just share me their experience that, you know what, they're not perfect. You know what, maybe they started on gray sheet, but then things changed with their lives, and this had to change, and that had to evolve. And what I found at the end of the day, what all these food plans, what all this abstinence is really all based around, all it's about is just honesty. Honesty. I can try to figure out my food all day. I can be on the strictest gray sheet food plan. If I'm not honest, I'll have prayer. And so that's what we're doing.
Okay, so I don't know if anyone's gone through like trying to over control their sleep plan. That's one thing that's like sort of been like sort of scary for me, because I began writing down my food and then I spiral into like a new bottom trying to control my food. And I just want to know if anyone, I know food plan is like giving up, but I don't know, for me, I can't get out of this conception that food plan is just trying to control. I don't know if anyone can control.
I'll say something on that. Look, at the end of the day, I don't think straight when it comes to food. I manage a lot of responsibilities at work, and I understand my job, but my perception when it comes to myself and my food is off. I lived for a year on 500 calories, and when I looked in the mirror, I was horrified at my pituitary stomach. So we have a problem of perception. We are cheats. We are liars. You're reading a book meant for drug addicts and alcoholics. So, our solution, I'm sorry to say it like that, but we have the same disease as people who steal. He's right. It starts with honesty, not with yourself, with another human being. If you write things down, you need to share it with someone else. Someone you trust that's going to say to you, 400 calories is not an abstinent day. Anywhere. So, yes, this is very particular because we all have to eat, and there's no, unlike sobriety, there's no black and white of what's sober, what's not. We all play games with food. And what is the definition of diet versus control versus this? I don't know. But just be honest with someone that has gone before you and is honest, and they can tell you when you're just downright dieting. If you're not working the steps, if you're not talking to God, if you're not pausing and saying, God, you help me when every iota of my being wants to just exercise over this for 5 hours. If you're not doing those things, yeah, you're controlling. But there are so many people who can help you. You just can't do it alone. You cannot trust your own judgment as it relates to truth. It's broken irrevocably for life.
One more question.
Can I just interject to that? When you work with someone, I would also suggest that you work with someone who's followed your path, who has your path. Because as a 100-pounder, let me tell you, all I had to do was eat three times a day, a lot, and I still lost weight. Because the amount of food I was eating at that amount of weight was exorbitant. So if you were to look at me and go, how are you losing so much weight? I mean, literally the first year and a half in my program, nobody at my work knew how I was losing weight because I was eating. I was never, I don't do light. But because I was a 100-pounder, even with the amount of food I was eating, I was losing weight. So I would never be the person to give you my experience, strength, and hope, because you probably haven't followed my path.
Yeah, I guess another thing is I watched Never Again, Dr. Oz, and they were showing like these, people who've lost like over 100 pounds, and, like showing their food plan. And I was like, oh my God, I eat more than that. And like, I think that was like another thing that like sort of made me control my food. So that was like, well, they're 300 pounds, and that's how much they're eating, and I'm like barely 100 pounds, and I'm eating more than them. And so yeah. But I think I understand.
One thing, my spot. I was on vacation with my fiance at her family's house, and so I became all, when I'm uncomfortable, I become all obsessed with how I'm eating. and wanted to be perfect for the food because everything else I'm nervous about. So I want to be perfect for the food because I don't want to lose my abstinence. This is 3 years. I don't want to lose my abstinence and I don't want to do this. So like I remember calling Carol and freaking out because like, I don't know if this food is less than 5 sugars in the ingredient. I'm like, I don't go by that anymore. But when I get scared about life, I become so obsessive. And he goes, Matt, you pray for the compulsion to eat to be lifted, but as you pray for the obsession. And then I'm like, oh. He goes, just ask God. Yeah. I'm like, okay. And then I swear to God, like the next day it was lifted and I could just enjoy being with my family.
Okay, I did see one other hand up. So let's do one quick question and one reply from the panel. Who was that? I saw, was it Sheldon or a woman who I saw? Okay, Sheldon, go for it.
Hi, thank you so much for all your shares, first of all. I started a new job, and it's a one-room little office with the owner, office manager, and all of us, and food is being passed around, and words are being used, and I'm in a sticky situation. And I want to know how I can stay abstinent in a situation like that when the fancy arugula or smoked almonds, all this food that I love. And I want to feel, I'm a people pleaser too, I want to feel like I'm belonging, but I don't want to do that. That's not me. What are the suggestions do you have?
One panelist.
One, I'm sorry.
I talk a lot. Sorry about that. When I got abstinence, it was at a job where for the first and last time in my life, I was handling food. And my sponsor at the time said, she said to me, would you eat the paper that you're typing? I said, no. She said, you have just as much business thinking about the food that you're serving as you are the paper you're typing. Not your food. None of your business. Would you eat paper? And I'm like, no, none of your business. Even today, holidays, it's, you know, food goes right under my nose all the time. My husband, you know, eats cookies. I can smell it. This is stuff that I love. It's not mine. Just because it's there doesn't mean it's. But again, I'm starting to sound like a broken record. The power to not do anything about it comes from God. It's not me. That moment when I get a whiff of chocolate and I just want to pull my hair out, it's like, okay, God, you got to do your bit. I just know now to my bones that if I ask him, he delivers. But that food is not yours. It doesn't matter if your boss is sitting right next to you. Sure.
That's all the time we have for Q&A. Let's thank our speakers. Everyone who asked the question, thank you. So right now we're going to have a 5-minute break, and we will return for the second half of the workshop where we're going to do writing exercises and sharing. So come back in 5.
All righty.